The VA's Million Veterans Program has collected blood from more than 500,000 veterans so far. It's now the largest genomic database in the world. MVP hit the halfway mark in August, and it's on track to hit its goal of 1 million veterans ahead of schedule. Dr. Suma Muralidhar is MVP's program director. She gave Federal News Radio's Lauren Larson a look at the program, how the data is managed, and what she and her team hope to gain from this research.
The Million Veteran Program is really aimed at understanding how our genes, the environment we live in, and our lifestyle all interact to influence our health and disease. And in order to understand, you know, why some people develop a disease versus others who don't, or why some people respond well to a medication whereas others don't, and some even have severe side effects, there's a lot of work that's been going on in terms of genetics and the roles that genes play in this. But it's not just the genes. It's also a lot of other things, the environment and the lifestyle that influence it. And what we need are very large numbers of people who have a certain illness or a disease and people who don't, so we can compare them. Mm-hmm. And so what the VA decided to do was to create this mega database of at least 1 million veterans. And that's just so that we'll have enough numbers representative of different, you know, diseases and illnesses that we see in veterans commonly, and also in people at large, in the general population. And so we collect a blood sample from them to do, you know, to understand, study the genes and other molecules that are in the blood sample, like proteins and such. And we also collect their lifestyle and military exposure information from self-reported surveys that they complete. And then we have access to one of the richest and deepest electronic medical records in the world, in the VA. And so we combine all of this information and make this available for research. So that's what the Million Veteran Program basically is, creating this huge database, a resource that researchers can use to then ask questions about specific illnesses.
Where are you now? And your goal is a million.
Yeah,
where are you right
I'm proud
now?
To say we have crossed the 500,000 mark back in August, and we're over 525,000 enrolled.
Do you have a projection for when you'll meet that million mark?
Yes, we hope within 4 years we will be there. 2020 is our goal, to meet the million mark. We're doing a few things now differently to be able to also get to that point sooner. It always takes a longer time when you ramp up, you know, start and ramp up a program. But now we're sort of reached that steady state in enrollment. We do about 100,000 veterans a year. We figured out what's the best way to do the outreach. And we're planning to move into a web-based enrollment as well. So far, it's all been mail, invitations being mailed to them. They complete their surveys on paper again and mail it back. So we're trying to change that and make a web-based process available in the future. So we'll probably get a lot more younger veterans mm-hmm. enrolling as well.
Can any veteran sign up for this?
So right now, it's veterans who are enrolled in the VA healthcare system. And the reason really was that wanted to take advantage of the electronic medical record information that we have on them to be able to understand the basis of health and disease. But we are looking now to expand beyond veterans, you know, make it available to all veterans, first of all. And also we're partnering with the Department of Defense. We're piloting it to start enrolling active duty members in MVP. This will not only, you know, this because they are naturally people who transition from, you know, the DOD into the VA. And this will enhance the amount of data that's available and help us make discoveries better.
When someone signs up for the program, they initially mm-hmm. fill out a survey. What is the program like ongoing for them? Do they update you, or are you just taking a look at their medical records from that point on?
So the plan is to do some longitudinal follow-up with them, so maybe every 5 years. It's been 5 years since we launched the program, and we are now just trying to design the first update survey for them. But by and large, because we have a good electronic health record system, we plan to follow them passively, just looking at their health records. But we have an opportunity. When we consent them, when they agree to enroll in this program, they agree for us to recontact them. So we can, you know, contact them again, get more information, send surveys, collect information that way, or get a new blood sample to do more research. Mm. So we have opportunities to do that.
How long does a blood sample typically last?
Well, if it's processed early enough, and what we do is we don't leave it as it is. It's processed right away as soon as it comes in. Mm-hmm. It comes into our lab average 24 to 48 hours after it's drawn. and they process it right away. They isolate DNA from it. And another sample that's called the Buffy coat that actually contains the DNA and other cells in it. And then also the plasma sample. And we store all of these. The DNA is very stable. The plasma has, you know, molecules called proteins, which are pretty stable for some of the work we can do. What we cannot do with these samples are RNA work. And this is, you have DNA, which is the basic genes, and the message that's encoded in the DNA gets transferred to another molecule called RNA, and then into a protein. That's the process. So we're able to capture the DNA and then some of the proteins and other things that are in the blood sample, which is good for quite a lot of work that we can do with them.
Can someone withdraw from the program?
Yes, absolutely. And we tell them when we consent them that at any time they want to withdraw, they can. And it's a pretty simple form. They can even call our information center and let us know. So that's why when we parse this data out to researchers, in addition to putting all the data together, we also check, there's a consent manager check at that point before it goes out to see, is this person still consented and within the program, or have they withdrawn? If they have withdrawn from the study, the data will not be sent out for further research. What's done before, you can't, you know, help that, but it won't be used any longer for research.
Do you have an idea of how much of the population has enrolled, of the veteran population?
Well, so we have about 9 million veterans that see the system. Mm-hmm. So, you know, our goal was to get at least 1 million, and we're halfway there. But if you look at nationwide, it's over 22 million or so, I think.
Wow.
So it's still a small fraction. But the good thing is it's very representative. We've looked at, you know, how it breaks down in terms of age, gender, demographics, you know, race, ethnicity, and so on. It's very representative of the larger veteran VA population.
How does this database compare to similar programs outside of the
government? Yes. So right now we are the largest after we crossed, and we're, you know, the 525,000 especially. There's the UK Biobank, you know, China has the Kuduri Biobank, and there are other biobanks even within the US, which are much smaller.
Mm-hmm.
I think our biggest asset is the richness of our electronic medical record, and also that we are one integrated, you know, health record system, medical record system. So it's easier to take all of the information that's in there and standardize them, because even you can't just take the electronic record data and make it available for research directly. A lot of the data has to be curated and cleaned before it's made available for researchers. And we have a whole team of researchers who do just that, and make that data research ready. And so I think given what we have in the VA system, that's an advantage we have over a lot of the other systems. And incidentally, we have one of the largest database with about 14% African Americans, which I don't think any other program of this kind has. So it's very enriched for studying illnesses in specific minority populations.
How big is this storage facility where all this is kept?
You know, you would think it's very large. I think there was a, you know, it's about 50 feet high. It's got these longitudinal storage tanks, which are, I would say, they can hold 4 million aliquots, essentially. Mm. And from each person, we're getting about 4 samples. Once we break it down to the different parts, we're storing 4 little samples on each person. So that's what this is built for. We are looking to actually establish a backup biorepository in the future and also add capability there for storage, additional storage.
Is the facility, you said it will house 4 million samples. So you must be about half full?
Yeah, yes. And we also use other, you know, freezers that are outside to use to store as well in the interim. So, and we're slowly getting everything back into this main freezer.
When do you project that backup facility will be ready, and or when will you need it?
So we are actually looking into it right now. So hopefully in 2 years, we will have it up and running. We'll have a backup repository. We've already identified another place where we can store some of these samples in the interim while another huge biorepository is being set up, because it takes time to get one of these up and running.
Tell me about the records management of all this. You've got to be pumping out all kinds of data with each of these samples, and you said you process them right when they come in. What does that look like?
Yes, especially the DNA. If you're trying to do a whole, you know, there are different ways to look at this DNA molecule. You can just do what's called genotyping, which looks at changes in the DNA sort of superficially across the genome. And the one, the chip that we use has about roughly 730 markers on it, changes in the genes, if you will. So that does not take a whole lot of storage. That's, you know, megabytes, tens of megabytes, but not a whole lot, or even KB sometimes. But if you are looking at a whole DNA sequence, again, ideally, there are like roughly 3 billion base pairs in the DNA in a person's whole genome. If you were to line them up, they're like letters, you know, if you line them up together, they should be like around 700, 750 megabytes. But the way we do sequencing is that in order to be sure that we get the every letter is accurate when it's done on the machine, there are different ways you can. We want to make sure that each letter is read like 30 times or 40 times so that we get accuracy. Because of that, and also the way when you sequence it, it's not just the entire DNA in one shot. They're all done in small fragments. And then you line up these fragments, align them. And so what comes out is almost like 200 gigabytes. If you look at raw DNA sequence that's coming off of a machine. And then that needs to be processed, of course. So right now, what we are doing on every sample that comes in, we're doing this basic genotyping, which is much low level. We have, you know, servers that are in Pittsburgh right now, at the Pittsburgh VA data center. And what we've done, what's unique about MVP is that we're storing all of the data in a central, secure enclave. And we are not letting researchers pull the data out of there. Rather, we're bringing researchers to the data. We're providing them all the tools they need to do their analyses. So they, once they're authorized and they have protocols and, you know, permission to access the DNA and the data, they come in, they log into our system, and they do all of the work that they need to do in the central secure system. So right now we have 8 scientific projects that are ongoing, and they're in different phases, looking at using MVP DNA, and they are using this genotype level data. The electronic health record data, we don't bring the whole copy and store it in our database, you know, because it's there where the VA normally stores it. We only bring in specific parts that's needed for a study. If someone's looking at prostate cancer, for example, we bring in only the data that's needed to look at that study. And then the survey data don't take a whole lot of space, you know, so everything is in our central servers. The other thing we're doing is, we have up to like 4 petabyte storage space right now. And we've done about 2,000 whole genomes, you know, where we sequence the entire DNA, but they are right now on hard disks. They're not on our servers. We are partnering with the Department of Energy. You know, they have one of the largest supercomputers in the world and also expertise in supercomputing. So we're partnering with them and to leverage the infrastructure they have. And they are going to build an infrastructure for us that we'll be able to house our data and let more researchers access the data, more computing capability, more storage space. Then we can put a lot of these whole DNA sequence data on there, on the servers.
So how do you decide what you're going to research?
That's a very interesting question. So most of our research comes in, you know, as investigator-initiated, the researchers. It's an intramural program. The VA researchers come up with questions. We also do service-directed research. So some of the initial research projects we have funded are in areas that are of great importance to veterans, like, for example, PTSD. You know, we're looking at the genetics of combat-exposed PTSD, because not everybody who's exposed to combat develops PTSD. So why do some while others don't? So that's one of the projects. The other one that we've funded is on Gulf War illness. Again, you know, it's a very complex illness, which is not very well understood even to this day. And so that, again, that's one of the studies. The second one is schizophrenia and bipolar disease, severe mental illness. That's, again, very important for the VA. We have one on substance abuse, again, which is a problem which is important in the VA. And what we learned from here will also be applicable to the general population. We have other studies on heart disease, you know, cardiovascular and cardiometabolic disease, chronic kidney disease, and then the last one is on age-related macular degeneration, eye disease. So you know, and many of these are seen in the common population too, like the heart disease and the metabolic disorders. So those are some of the first studies. And this was done, these studies were mostly funded by, a couple of them were investigator initiated. They came in with ideas. And then we put out requests for applications within the VA. Researchers submit the ideas, and then they undergo peer review, scientific peer review, to see what's the most meritorious science that can come out of this database. And we pick the best to fund. That's how they get selected.
You mentioned securing the data, mm-hmm. and it's all in a central location, but talk a little bit more about how that data is secured and how you reassure the veterans who are participating in the program that their data is going to be okay.
The first thing is we do not use any direct identifiers. Like, for example, when a blood sample is collected, we don't have the name or social security number on those tubes. They all have a code, a specimen code that they're collected under. Similarly, on the surveys, we assign a number. It's called the Genesis number. Genesis is where we store a lot of all the data. It stands for Genomic Information System for Integrated Science. That's what Genesis stands for. And so we assign a Genesis ID number. So everything is either in sort of a code that's assigned. And even the different data that comes in from the electronic medical record into Genesis, when the comes in with a code, it's not by any identifiable number. But we have an honest broker that can make a connection between all these numbers to say this data belongs to this person. So very few authorized people have access to that crosswalk to say, this survey data, this blood sample, this electronic health record data all match up to one person. So that's only done behind the scenes. Researchers don't get to see that.
What are your next big hurdles and your challenges with the program as you grow and expand?
Our biggest challenge is, of course, the computing challenges and that's one of the reasons we're partnering. And so we're just starting this collaboration. So I think our biggest challenge is, and it's always you bring cultures of two different agencies together. So we're just trying to, learn how each other works. And I think getting that stabilized and keeping it in a way that's interesting to both agencies' missions and making this data very broadly available. Right now, it's, only researchers within the VA can access it. If you're outside the VA, you can get what's called a without compensation appointment at the VA. We call them walk appointments. And then they're able to access because it's within the VA firewall and you have to do it that way. But our goal is to be able to make it broadly available. And it's consented that way. Veterans have agreed that their data can be shared with, other federal agencies and academic researchers. And so the biggest challenge is for us to set up this huge computing system where thousands of researchers can simultaneously log in and be accessing the specific data they need and do their research within this system. I think that's what we're gearing up for, and it's our biggest challenge. And also to keep veterans engaged, veterans who are enrolled. We don't want to just, do this one-time thing and forget about them. We do newsletters every year now to keep them informed about what's happening. But then once we create this web portal to be able to enroll them and recruit them that way, we also hope to use that to engage them, keep them engaged, with the results that's coming out of this work more than we can. So those are the two things that I think, keeping them interested and engaged in the program and building the computing infrastructure to be able to have lots of researchers access and bring really high quality science out of it. And then the last piece I would say is translating this into the clinic. The whole reason for doing this was once you have all these scientific discoveries that are coming out and validated, we're able to actually use it to improve veterans' healthcare and healthcare of people in general. And so we are actually starting up a pilot now to understand what's the best way to return. Right now, MVP is a research database. So we don't return individual genetic results that we find because we don't know the meaning of all that yet. So in the future, though, hopefully, once we know what a specific change in the gene does, we're able to do it in it's called CLIA compliant way. So that means the way you collect the sample, the way you process it, meets those CLIA standards, and you can use those in clinical care. So what we want to be able to do in the future is if a veteran comes to see his doctor at the VA, the doctor not only has all his symptoms and other things that he can talk to him about, he has, you know, the electronic health record, the history. He also has a genomic case file, maybe, so he knows, you know, what are the variations, what he needs to watch out for when he prescribes medication. Will this person react to it badly or will he respond to it? You know, those things, and be able to use all of this information to improve the way we take care of veterans and give them what's now called precision medicine. You know, it's been called personalized medicine, individualized medicine, all these things, but the latest word is precision medicine. So you give care that's specific to that individual based on their genetics, their lifestyle, their environmental exposures, and so on.
Well, we are out of time. Is there anything that we haven't covered, anything that you'd like to add?
You know, I just wanted to say this is an entirely voluntary program. And before we launched the program, we did a survey of veterans, and they were very supportive of that, you know, saying that the VA should be doing such a program. About 80% said we should have a program like this. And almost 70% said they would participate if asked. Now, we're not seeing that level of participation, but they're very highly altruistic. And I can't thank the veterans enough for participating this in this program, coming forward and doing this. And as I said before, this is really a way they look at it as serving the nation again. And so we're very proud of them and proud of the program.
Dr. Suma Muralidhar, Program Director of the Million Veteran Program at the Veterans Affairs Department, speaking with Federal News Radio's Lauren Larson. We'll post more information and the entire interview at federalnewsradio.com.